Welcome to the Digital Leaders Podcast. My guest today is Shay Akiwowo. Shay is a women's rights activist and campaigner. She's the founder and director of Glitch, a nonprofit campaigning to end online abuse. And she was selected as the Amnesty International Human Rights Defender in 2018 and our Digital Leader of the Year in 2019. Hi, and welcome to the Digital Leaders Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me, Robin.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Shay. You, of course, were or still are our Digital Leader of the Year for 2019. We have the vote, the public vote open at the moment. I know you'll know there's some great candidates again this year for that top spot, but it's really important, I think, that we have you on the podcast so people can find out more about you and how well you did. And the amazing things you do. So let's start with that. So what do you do, Shay?
So I'm the founder and executive director of Glitch. And Glitch is a small UK-based charity determined to make the online space safe for all. And we do that through raising awareness of online abuse and its impact. We do a lot of advocacy work with both tech companies and government because we want long-term and systematic change. And we also inspire people to take action through our digital self-care and self-defense trainings, as well as our digital citizenship training, so that we can start building communities and behaviors that we want to start seeing on our online spaces that makes everyone have a nicer experience. I started Glitch after experiencing my own form of abuse and harassment when a video of a speech that I made, ironically about racial injustice, and now look at the kind of times we're in where people are welcoming that conversation. A video of that speech went viral and later sparked kind of cross-platform harassment and abuse. And there was just so many gaps in both technical innovation, in algorithms detecting inappropriate content and abusive content. There was gaps in provision and services. There was also gaps in just vocabulary around capturing my experience as a Black woman and the diversity and intersections with all of that. And at the time, I was an elected councillor, one of the youngest elected councillors. And so I felt like the injustices that I was seeing in kind of my offline communities were now being reproduced online, where communities like mine use the internet and online spaces and tech to kind of bridge the gap around inequalities offline, where we conversate and connect and flourish and cultivate our identities and campaign and mobilize online. All of those online spaces were being under attack. And as a counselor, I was supporting my local community, my local offline community, where I'd gone to primary school and secondary school. And it was really weird door knocking around areas where I'd obviously played out and been naughty. I was seeing the same kind of community civic duty that was, I felt it was lacking in my area, now also happening online too. And so a lot of the things that I had learned as a kind of locally elected politician allowed me to kind of have the transferable skills to set up Glitch. But Glitch basically was like a campaign birthed out of my experience. And as well as hearing about other women's experience and knowing that women are 27 times more likely to be harassed online. And when you apply an intersectional lens, you see that LGBT and Black women and trans women are most likely to be impacted by online abuse. And during COVID and lockdown, that is increased. And I hope we can talk about that in a moment. But the campaign was about us reclaiming our online spaces and not allowing it to be hijacked and weaponized. And I felt like we needed to fix these glitches that were not allowing our online spaces to be a safe place for all. And quickly, the campaign became a movement with lots of people wanting to support and volunteer and donate. And now we're a registered charity officially. Whoop. And it's amazing. Just yesterday, we had 127 people join our free digital self-care and self-defense workshop. And it was the first time that I wasn't part of the training, I wasn't part of the planning, I wasn't a part of any of the work. And it was really weird. As a kind of leader, you want that milestone of being able to delegate and pass on that work to other people and a team. But at the same time, I was like, oh my gosh, I remember setting up Glitch and like doing the school like tours of our workshops and doing it all to the point where I lost my voice. And now there's a whole team. I mean, we're small. I don't want people to think that we're a massive team, but we're a small team who were able to kind of keep it going, and demand is just constantly there. You know, almost 130 women and non-binary people wanting to know how to stay safe online. It just shows there's a huge demand for it. And the last 3 years have been amazing. It's been amazing to be, like, for me to learn so much around setting up an organization and a charity, being in the tech space, how we can hold tech companies to account the same way that people are understanding how we hold politicians to account, and applying that. It's been really, really great to kind of raise digital citizens in a way. It's been really, like, good learning for me as I'm not even 30 yet, and, like, I've founded and set up a charity, and I've learned so much around how do I apply my kind of feminist social justice lens in setting up a charity that crosses through so many sectors, right? Tech and women and women's sector. And so that's been amazing. But it's also been really amazing to see so many people, like, adopt our language and to be recognized as well with the award around digital citizenship and being awarded the digital leader. It's really great to see, because it's now, like, the fruits of the labor. 3 years ago, like, I remember, like, even living off my credit card for, like, a couple of months, because I was chasing invoices because there was no bookkeeper at the time. And that it's amazing to see now, and I'm really looking forward to discussing more about the stuff that we are doing now.
I mean, that's an amazing story and a huge success, and congratulations. Where do you think going back to your early inspirations, where do you think that huge sense of civic responsibility you're demonstrating come from? I mean, you know, sort of lots of people don't do what you've done. I mean, you're an incredibly young local councillor. I mean, it, you know, before you got going with Glitch and tackled this specific issue, but yeah, where did it come from?
I get asked that question a lot. And I think it was just a slow burner of, like, I love TV. Like, it's my favorite pastime. I love all sorts of TV shows. And I just remember growing up and not understanding why my life and the area that I was in didn't look like what was on TV. I didn't understand, like, why we didn't have those kind of investments in our education and youth services. I just didn't understand the difference. And I remember asking my mum a lot about, like, you know, why do we have homeless people? And I just didn't understand why, like, my mum, who's Nigerian, so African, that she was being treated differently. And I saw that growing up, and I just kept asking why. And I definitely believe that, like, the death of Charlotte and her being murdered at a house party, like, was a catalyst in me, that questioning and inquisitive nature, wanting to know why she died. Like, what, like, why did someone think it was acceptable to hold a knife? Why, you know, that just asking why. And it led me to seeing that, like, decisions were being made about my community and people who look like me, but we were not a part of the decision-making table. We were not being consulted, and that had to change. Charlotte was one of us, was a school friend of mine who was stabbed at a house party. It was one of the first kind of stabbings we had heard of back in the early or mid 2000s, and it being a young girl, and it really shook our community. And it, you know, there's not the kind of care that there is now. I mean, it's not even amazing what there is now for young people who are affected by knife crime. But I just remember thinking, like, this can't happen. This is wrong, and this is not what I see on TV. Like, why is there such disparity? And yeah, that's probably a catalyst for why I decided to try and do something about it, and try to be part of the decision making table and room and bring more people along with me.
And I love the point you make that you weren't seeing your lived experience kind of on the medium you love so much of TV and TV shows, and asking your mum, you know, why am I not seeing that? What then took place? I mean, you obviously decided to stay in your community and work to change that, because often, you know, when people have real drive, they leave their, you know, they leave their community and move away and move into different environments. So do you still live and are clearly active in that community and are looking to fix it sort of from the ground up, as it were?
I think Glitch is now my focus and my baby, and there are so many amazing activists that we're seeing now, thanks to the global introspection that Black Lives Matter of 2020 has brought about. We're seeing so many amazing Generation Z, but also people of my generation and older finally getting the limelight and the platform to talk about different forms of injustice in our communities, and also doing it through a really intersectional lens. So, you know, talking about how young LGBT communities are impacted, and mixed race communities, and, you know, conversation being had about Francophone communities here as well, and the diaspora, and how they are so like marginalized, and Somalian communities. So yeah, I feel like I could not be more proud of the amazing campaigners that are out there now, raising so many, bringing to the surface so many different issues that are being a problem at school, like talking about how kids are being excluded for wearing their hair a certain way, and how that is anti-Black. Like, that's just amazing, and something that didn't exist back in my day.
So digital, of course, and you know, this is the Digital Leaders podcast. So TV was a big part of your younger life. I mean, you know, you would think that technology and digital communication, social media, was going to be this amazing medium where lives could be made better, you know, social networks would be stronger. And yet your experience of it has been really, is it right to say it's been really negative? Or do you're clearly using the medium to build Glitch? You know, kind of, how do you feel about that?
Well, the whole thing about Glitch is optimism. So we're about fixing the glitch. So definitely there are some tech design, tech innovation that is inherently problematic. A conversation that is being had at the moment is banning facial recognition because it's just full of so much bias, and the data is just poorly misused and managed, and there's a whole ethical concern. So I'm glad about that. But I think technology does try in its best to be part of the solution, not a problem. And I think some of the problems we are seeing on the platform, I don't think are created by these platforms necessarily. I think they've been amplified. But I'm not at all. I think a lot of people mistake me for being this kind of like boohoo about tech. No, it's my passion for responsible, ethical tech is why we have Glitch, and wanting to increase the standard and decrease our tolerance to online harms and biases and unintended consequences. If we can stop seeing gender-based violence, online hate, online violence, misinformation, and all the different tactics that are disproportionately used against marginalized communities as an unintended consequence, then I feel like I can retire. But at the moment, we keep creating platforms, keep creating tech that doesn't have a duty of care in mind, a safety by design principle in mind. And so we keep having these so-called unintended consequences, despite knowing it happens every single time there's a rollout of a new platform that doesn't have diverse communities and at the heart of it and involved in it, and doesn't champion lived experience as well.
I mean, definitely it's tech design, in the sense that there are, yeah, I mean, as you say, often described as unintended consequences and unconscious biases. But at the end of the day, the people designing the technology in the first place are not diverse enough. Is that the view?
I don't think it's the view. I think it's fact. What tech company do we have that has proper representation of women, proper representation of people of color? I think when you don't have diversity of thought, don't have diversity of people, you can't be saying that we're having a tech platform that serves the so-called users. And that, I think, Glitch does a good point of highlighting that in collaboration with many other partners, many of which have been saying this before us too. So this is not a new thing. I think, again, like the global introspection Black Lives Matter 2020 has brought about is calling on Google and Facebook and so forth to recognize it has a diversity issue. But it hasn't. It's not because no one's been raising it before. It's just that it took this massive wake-up call on the backdrop of COVID, and meaning that there were so many of us locked down that had to see it, that meant that, okay, finally tech diversity is being addressed. And I think what we had before was tokenistic tech diversity as well. We had one or two forms of kind of short-term interventions to try and get fixed quotas or fix lack of representation, or it was very tokenistic in kind of giving people a platform and a limelight, but not really pulling apart like how strategies and how processes in itself could be racist and anti-Black, could be absolutely sexist and uncomfortable for those diverse groups to want to be involved. And I think what we're seeing now is a really, hopefully, many tech companies and platforms and digital users really pulling apart their strategy and their framework and wanting to have that conversation and dialogue, and long may it continue.
So that's very heartening to hear. So that's obviously, this is your area of speciality, which I think a lot of people listening to this podcast kind of will not be embedded into the detail of. So since Black Lives Matter, the campaign happened, you have seen real non-tokenistic willingness on the part of the tech companies to get to grips with this?
I've seen statements that I've moved the needle from, oh, we will reflect, or we thank you for highlighting, to we are investing in getting these communities into like our grad schemes or these courses, or tackling kind of the lack of women in STEM. We are seeing investment in X. We are hiring these diversity and inclusion consultants rather than relying on the small number of Black and Asian people who are in these tech companies to now be their spokesperson for their communities and actually hiring experts and paying them. I think what we're seeing is a better response and understanding that just because you might not be vocally racist, we can be implicitly upholding those structures. And I think for once we're having that nuanced conversation around what does your team look like? What does your leadership look like? What does your board look like? And everyone having to do that introspection. Time will tell who's actually walked the walk. So I'm looking forward. But I know that a lot, you know, last year, a lot of language around diversity and inclusion was very tokenistic. And it feels like there is a disconnect between the kind of academia activist world and tech when it comes to social activism, civic good, digital leadership, responsible tech ethics. And I think for once now we're all on the same kind of page and timelines. Obviously activists probably want this happening a lot quicker because they've been quiet for it longer, but for once I think all sectors, banking, finance, tech, education, governments are having to do an introspection, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in a year's time.
Brilliant. Let's come back to Glitch and kind of what you're specifically working on at the moment. I guess the starting point, it would be really interesting to understand what has been happening during lockdown and maybe, you know, kind of whether that reflects on what you're focused on. You know, everybody's been on their keyboards for a lot longer than usual, probably. Have you seen a worsening of the situation, an improvement of the situation, or more of what you're concerned about at Glitch?
I mean, before COVID, we had massive concerns about the lack of investment and discussion about online harms and those barriers for people becoming good digital leaders, and the lack of education and training, capacity building of digital citizens to become really good digital citizens and model the social norms we want to see. And I think lockdown then exacerbated that problem. We were really concerned that we were making people's kitchen tables, living rooms, gardens, the extension of the workplace without any support and guidance around employees, digital self-care, security, defense. And I felt like that was missing in the conversation. We did start seeing late towards the end of lockdown, governments acknowledging domestic violence and how women particularly were, because women are particularly affected by domestic violence, were forced to be in lockdown with perpetrators. So we kind of had government do announcements around intervention and investment in that space. But again, tech abuse within domestic violence was being missed. So Glitch rolled out a kind of insight survey where we had support from Emma Watson and Jamila Jamil, which was amazing to understand how are women and non-binary people experiencing the online space during lockdown? Has online abuse increased for you? Have you experienced online abuse in the last 12 months, but it's particularly gotten worse during lockdown? We wanted to understand that. The report will come out in September, but I can share some preliminary findings, which basically says, we told you so. We told you so in terms of online abuse increasing for women of color and non-binary people as well. Online abuse increasing for those who had experienced it 12 months ago and it being particularly worse. But what is really alarming is that only 9% of people receive some form of training or support from their employers or volunteering supervisor around how to stay safe online. If we're going to have another lockdown, there's going to be COVID part two. We have to make sure that we're learning lessons from this lockdown in all senses. So tackling misinformation, yes, tackling kind of infrastructure and the big IT, but we can't allow the increase in internet usage, which is something what, like for us, our survey said it was 90%, but Ofcom are doing regular monthly reports on the increase of internet usage. We can't go into winter, have a potential lockdown and allow history to continue repeating itself, because literally we're talking about life and death for some people who are on the receiving end of death threats, doxing, cross-platform harassment, who are being hacked, dead naming, which is a tactic that affects trans communities, is where somebody would bring up their previous identity in order to try and shame, embarrass them or cause some form of harm. We have to get a grapple around this, so we can't allow the increase in technology, which we want to see, right? And to some extent, we want to be embracing tech and innovation, but we don't want that to be at the expense of new tactics to further marginalize and abuse communities. Because this time last year, or this time 6 months ago, the term Zoom bombing didn't exist. So we had a massive spike in usage of platforms like Zoom without any thinking about security and safety. If we're going to do that again, we have to learn from these lessons and also anticipate new tactics, because as we get smarter, so do the trolls, so do those that are actively deciding to be bad digital citizens.
And to achieve that, we're going to need leadership. I do want to talk to you about digital leadership, and you were our digital leader. You are our digital leader, and that is because you showed real leadership in this digital space. What is it that leaders need to be doing? I mean, we can legislate, we can train, but also we need that motivation. So that's the push. What's the pull to change this? The push is we can bring in more legislation, we can insist on training. We can make sure that all leaders, are aware of these issues and take them seriously. But are there some pull factors as well where we can demonstrate that by reducing this, we get better outcomes?
We're going to have blind spots to how other people use this space because we're not them. I'll tell you one thing that was really pulling. I was on a call last week, Monday, with the digital minister talking about the online harms paper and how that's progressing. For those that don't know, the online harms white paper is going to be potentially a bill, whatever kind, that would look at some form of regulation of social media companies and them having a duty of care. It's long overdue. It's good. And we were having this meeting, and I was on the call with other civil society groups and disabled activists. And it's where I learned that people maliciously send flashing GIFs to those who have epilepsy to incite an epileptic attack. And I had no idea. And it made me really think about how when we use GIFs or create our own GIFs, that it's not flashing. And we now need to make sure that we do have all, image description and really make an effort to do that. Because, for one, Glitch can't be talking about intersectionality and it doesn't walk the talk and doesn't model the kind of uses of the platform. But it just shows that one thing that we need to do in terms of pool is be able to give the mic and have a platform to those who've lived experience to tell us how they're experiencing the platform so that we are not part of the problem and that we can also amplify their calls for change. I think another pool or incentive, I think, is that people don't realize that they can hold tech companies to account. I mean, you've got apathy in politics and it's all-time low, people will say. But I think there is a notion that and a basic understanding that, Parliament serves us. Parliament is sovereign, but it serves the people. And we can hold MPs and politicians to account. We're not quite getting that when it comes to kind of tech platforms, the big tech giants, but any platform. We're starting to see it more loudly with Amazon and people calling on Amazon to be more ethical around around workers' rights and so many other things, but people don't quite know that they can and how to hold tech companies to account, and that as consumers and as digital citizens, they have every right to, and I would actually say a responsibility to. And when we have our trainings, people do admit in the evaluation that they've been too tolerant to the abuse on the platform because they just thought that was it. And so I think the pull factor is inspiring them that they can make change. And it's like with any activist movement, you're seeing with the environment, with activists and campaigners using emotive language and evidence to try and pull people to understand this is a crisis of our time. We have to make sure that we see that tech intersects all of those things, how tech companies could be hindering our progress to environmental justice and change, how it impacts on racism, how it impacts on gender equality, how it impacts our democracy, which because we've seen that MPs consistently get abused, particularly women MPs, and that's having an impact on democracy in the next generation. So the more that we can show people how tech is so, getting tech right and an ethical tech framework right is going to help so many of our other social ills that we're trying to address and that we can. And I think the more we have success stories, and I think we saw that actually with Glitch and our Black Lives Matter Online 2 petition, where we were getting tech companies to recognize that showing or allowing videos of the late George Floyd and other horrific content like that to be constantly showed without any sensitive material label or trigger warning was having a massive impact on the mental health of Black users. When we had a milestone in Twitter, for example, acknowledging that after our meeting with them, so many people were like, wow. And, you know, you saw some people who we helped, were so impressed, not impressed, I don't want to say this is like impressed by us, but we're like, oh, so you can do something about it. I think it opened people's eyes that we're going to start calling for change online as well as offline. And I think the reason why we have that barrier or that problem is because I think these tech platforms have a really good kind of PR-ish brand that makes it out like they're still a small tech company trying to like work out the kinks in their dad's garage when they're multi-billion pound for-profit business. And the more we use that and remind people that every other sector has a regulator and has some kind of accountability framework and a duty of care, whether it's alcohol, whether it's financing, and we saw that with the crash, that it could have even been better. Why can't we have that when it comes to tech accountability?
So how hopeful are you that the online harms bill is going to hit the spot? You're obviously involved in the consultations for it, and that kind of pulls you into some sense of responsibility for what comes out the other end. So how is that going? How confident are you?
I mean, BBC last week reported that we were looking at a time frame of 2023-24, and this bill has been discussed and talked about for years. So we're looking at this taking 10 years in total. We just don't have that time. Tech moves way too quickly for us to spend 10 years discussing a potential bill. I think there are some quick wins, though, that we don't have to kind of wait for this massive piece of legislation. We could be using income generated from the new digital services tax on tech companies. We could be apportioning some of that revenue to tackling online abuse and promoting online safety and digital citizenship and digital leadership as well. I'm sad that it's taking too long. I think it needs to be a lot more intersectional. At the moment, it only focuses on children and terrorism. We need it to talk about all other forms of harm and how they intersect for this to be a bill that works for everybody.
Have you done much, I'm sure you have, with the public sector, because that's always a sector that can, you know, will spend time, money and resources on these sorts of issues in a way that it's much harder to get the private sector to. So do you think the public sector is better at this stuff and far more aware of it and dealing with it, or have they got some way to come yet?
We all have a part to play when it comes to tackling online abuse. I think it's you see a lot in the media that when tech companies fail at something, they'll be like, but you know, the governments need to be doing stuff around anti-racism work or anti-Semitism work, or you see political parties blaming each other, or you see governments pushing the blame on tech companies. Everyone's kind of pushing the blame rather than saying, look, let's all model the behaviors and the framework we want to see. Let's be the change we want to see. Let's all play our part. If political parties dealt with their members and being abusive online, there'd be less content for platforms to deal with. If governments provided basic training around digital citizenship, as well as kind of that tackling all the kind of offline hatred, offline violence, then there'd be less for the platforms to deal with. But also platforms and the algorithms need to be addressed, need to be regulated and reviewed. So everyone has to play their part. And I think you've got public sector workers as well who, or you know, organizations in the public sector who might not understand how when advertising on the platform, it could be part of the problem around data harvesting and mining, or when they, and you know, release a campaign and they have a spokesperson and they're getting abused and they don't kind of show online solidarity with that person who's now facing abuse. I think also we could be seeing better behaviors from public sector. But again, that's not a blame game. That's because there hasn't been guidance and hasn't been a conversation. There hasn't been a national conversation about what behaviors do we want to see online.
You've taken on a massive challenge, and I think digital leaders applaud you. I'm sure everybody, I really want to believe that everybody listening to this podcast is going to be cheering for you and saying, you know, this has to stop, this has to be tackled. This is, as you say, kind of like, thankfully for most of us, a lived experience we don't have to go through, but just the most appalling consequence. I'm not going to say unintended consequence, because people know it's there, as you mm-hmm, say now. Mm-hmm. that people have to deal with. And just huge credit, kudos to you for making such a success of this. And as you say, you know, that lovely experience you described of something happening without you needing to do it shows that you're now getting to that important scaling moment where it can, the whole thing can grow and happen without you and the founder having to push and make everything happen in your program. So congratulations on that as well. What's next?
So August, we will have our summer break. We try very hard to champion the self-care that we preach and live by it. So we'll be going on a summer break. But before then, we will be working on our COVID-19 and the ripple effect for tech abuse report that will go out in September. So it'd be great to have digital leaders being involved in that in some way. We will continue to kind of work on our research around Black women's experience of online abuse, misinformation and harassment. We have one more digital self-care and self-defense training as part of our summer 2020 program, where we've had over 400 people already take part in our training, which again is showing there's a huge demand for this piece of education work. And we have that on the 15th of September. So again, if anyone is listening and would love to attend, please do. And then we hope that we can gain support from corporates and funders to do an autumn winter program, because as I said, this work, the demand for our workshop has massively increased over the last 6 months. And then next year, we will be looking to grow the team a little bit more, which is exciting. We'll be picking up work again with hopefully footballers, and the abuse that we're seeing on the pitch and online, it's seen a lot more during lockdown and COVID. We saw that with Ian Wright not too long ago. We see other footballers kind of speaking out. So we want to pick up our work again next year to talk about some active bystander training and digital citizenship training within football teams and with them stand up to racism. And we're just going to continue developing our resource because, as you know, tech and the digital space is fast pace, so we have to keep updating our resources for MPs on how to stay safe and for citizens to kind of know their rights online as well. So looking forward to that, and potentially looking to translate one of our toolkits into another language so we can keep having this global outlook to our work.
Brilliant. So I've got my little to-do list here. So we will definitely promote out your 15th September workshop to the community. I'm sure you'll be inundated with interest, so you'll
thank you.
Will probably cause you a headache. Digital Leaders Week, 12th to 16th of October. We will get in touch and make sure that Glitch again put something on, and we can really highlight and promote that as part of the week. But you know, people who have listened to this podcast who want to find out more could come and get involved in something directly. And then we have our annual Power and Responsibility Conference, which is very much around some of these issues you've been talking about, taking place in November, by when the research and the response to the research will be out. So I do hope we can convince
you
to come and join that platform and be part of that conference this year. We always finish on our quick fire round.
Mm-hmm.
And our first question is, which book would you recommend to our listener and why?
I was just talking about this book with my boyfriend. I will recommend Black Leadership by Manning Marble. And he talks about the different types of leadership models that we see in kind of campaign movements. And it's the same, I think, we see with the way organizations and companies are set up, having this kind of figurehead who has to be charismatic, and how that kind of can lead to problems, unintended and intended consequences, whichever way you want to look at it, and how we can start moving towards more of a collective leadership model. And I think that's Glitch. We're all about collaboration and working in partnership, both because it helps share resources because we're such a small organization, but because I think it's the future. I think we have to start doing things more in partnership, and I'd love to see small tech companies, small tech accountability companies, be able to share like back office spaces and office and, you know, HR teams and things like that. And I think that book is really inspiring around really looking at how we change our leadership models to be more inclusive, intersectional, and championing more diverse voices. So yeah, Manning Marble, Black Leadership.
Brilliant. And collaboration, partnership, inclusion, diversity, these are definitely the traits of a good digital leader. So second question is, who would you like to have lunch with, living or dead?
Idris Elba, 100%.
And I wonder why. Oh, God, tell us why.
So everyone else is like, why am I so obsessed with Idris Elba? Like, I have a photo of him on top of my my desk in my house. And I think it's just because he's from Newham, first of all. If people don't know, he grew up in Canning Town, Custom House. He worked in the garage here as well. And just seeing him do so well, it's just so inspiring. I love that he keeps his accent. He keeps like the lingo. He hasn't changed himself, and he's just so authentic. And obviously he's very easy on the eye as well.
All good reasons. And last but not least, can you share one thing about yourself that our listener might be surprised to hear?
I am allergic to bananas.
Oh.
Yeah, which is weird because you think bananas and plantains are cousins, but they're not. I had to get an allergy test. They're not related at all, despite looking very much alike. But yeah, I can't have bananas. I get an itchy tongue and a swollen throat.
Right. Well, that is, yes. Look, it's just been a real tour de force of your topic and your passions and your ideas and the challenges that you're tackling, which has been hugely impressive. So Shay, thank you so much for being part of the Digital Leaders Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin.
That is it for this episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast. Now, of course, we would love to know your thoughts. Tag us at DigiLeaders and let us know. And if you want to find out more about today's guest, head on over to our website, digileaders.com/podcast, and we have all that information there. That is it for this week. I'm your host, Robin Knowles. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back soon with another episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast.